Good morning and welcome to episode 153 of Taking the Charge podcast with you from San Marcos, California. I'm David Hine of Hine News. Thanks for stopping by yet again. We are in California, on holidays, and I have broken away from my holidays to get a podcast done, and so this is episode 153. Thanks for coming around. There's plenty of ways to get in touch with us. The easiest way probably is Twitter. I'm at Hine News, HEINNEWS. An amazing milestone accomplished overnight here with the 2,000th follower. To those listeners who also may be followers, unbelievable! Thank you so much. It's amazing that so many people actually care what I say, what I tweet, what I do, and there's nothing but appreciation from my side to you guys. So I just as usual plan to keep on doing what I'm doing. Amazing. Thank you very much. I totally appreciate it. There's the email address is hinenews at gmx.de. There's the Facebook group, which is if you put in Taking the Charge podcast, and you'll get to the group. You have to ask to come on in, but of course we'll let you in. I just want to welcome you at the door, if you will. And then there's hinenews.com is the website. So plenty of ways. Also, if you want to, please go over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast. So it'd be fantastic. So like I said, it's Southern California on holidays right now, and visiting family down here, and have been watching quite a bit of the under 16 European Championship. I was actually pretty impressed. I've always said that the under 16s is not something that I really want to watch too much of, because it's kind of hard to get a good idea of where excelling at the 16 levels is anything but a guarantee for success, just because there's still so much development to be done between the 16s and 18s. And so that was one of the reasons why I've always kind of shied away from it, but it was definitely a good watch. And again, thanks to FIBA for broadcasting all those games live and on demand at on their YouTube channel. That obviously made things a lot easier to watch, and so I was actually able to watch quite a bit. And then also, obviously, like I said, I'm on vacation, so I was able to kind of pop in and out, and then still catch all the good games, and not have to just miss them because you're not watching at the same time. So, and of course the time difference as well. Amazing summer. Youth summer is come to a close for the Bosnian men. The under 18s obviously went to the semifinals, finished fourth with Edin Atic, which was their first time that they've ever been to a FIBA semifinal, FIBA authorized semifinal. Then there was the 99 age group winning the title at the European Olympic Youth Festival in Georgia, which was a great feat. They beat Spain in the final, and then comes this tournament where they come and get the title at under 16s, their first medal, and they go and make it the top one. An amazing result, and the pictures, the videos of Sarajevo, downtown Sarajevo, truly a hero's welcome. Ended up, somewhere around 50,000 people coming out and welcoming a U16 team. So absolutely amazing, fantastic support. And yeah, I have to say it's on the rise. I mean, you look at the guys that are here at this competition, and you think of the guys that are at the under 18s. Unfortunately, the under 20s went down. They finished 19th, but I think actually 7 teams ended up going down. So it's not that they lost it at the end, but so the summer didn't start that well, but got better and better. And you know, I assume that the old guys, the veterans, the Eurobasket team, will have a certain level of motivation to show and to give a little to show to match the feat. You know, it'd be, I think it gives Bosnia an added push. You know, as great as the results are, you know, there's been a share of strange bad news headlines coming out of Bosnia. You know, there was this report. It's not a report. It's actually some 99s, not of these players, but FIBA is investigating the fact that I think 9 Bosnian 99 or under players were sold basically to Qatar Basketball Federation and were given Qatari passports, Bosnia, because those players are Muslim, which obviously fits in with the Qataris. And then and you know, there was a tweet out there saying 50,000. I've heard upwards of 200,000 per player. And so, you know, it's an ugly scene. You know, it's an ugly fact. And you know, Qatar obviously came out and had this really a farce of a World Cup at the handball, where they were the hosts. And I want to say about 15 naturalized players from really all over the world, and ended up winning the title. And and so it seems to me that they're starting to try to look at the basketball level. I was told that they were also trying to look for some Turkish players, and also that this grouping of Bosnians, there was 9 basketball players, but there were more athletes that were given passports. And in basketball, obviously, if you get them at that age group, they're not considered naturalized. So it's a pretty hardcore situation there. And then you had there was a story that the Federation, the Bosnian Federation, had to take a loan out to send the under 18 team to Greece, to Volos. And you know, lots of reports out there that the Federation really, I guess, last minute even you know, hadn't even until even the last minute hadn't paid a registration fee, and that a company in the hometown of coach ended up paying for it. This report from let's see if I can get it right away, from Igor Maranovic, I want to say. Hang on one second. Igor Maranovic at Sofoklo 13 on Twitter, that they had to pay, that a private company ended up paying the registration fee. Otherwise, the Bosnians may have been kicked out of the 16s. So some pretty ugly scenes. You know, I mean, the money is kind of a tough situation anyhow. But you know, just like Serbia, Croatia, you know, Bosnia continues to really develop the talent. And and there's quite a good group of them. You know, Dusan Muza, you know, clear MVP of the tournament. And Negos Sekiras was a fantastic versatile player, and Shadi Champara was a little undersized point guard who ran a great show, hit big shots, and that trio will go into the under 17 World Championship next summer as the reigning European champion. So it will be exciting to see them play against the other great teams of the world. You know, the Canadas, the USAs. Australia is another team that just qualified as well. Actually, why don't I just kind of quick delve into that one? The under 18 European, the under 18 FIBA Asia Championship, not FIBA Asia, FIBA Oceania Championship last summer. Last summer was, I believe, eight teams in Oceania, and there was two groups of four with New Zealand and Australia at the top of those groups, and then the group winners heading to the final, or maybe even it was the top two going to the semis. I don't remember, but it was pretty clear setup that New Zealand and Australia would clash in the final, which also meant a one-off game. You know, it took some big time shots by Dejan Vasilevic to get Australia into the under 19 World Championship against a very good New Zealand team. You know, they had the shot. You know, the Australians didn't bring many of their top guys, and just like the World Championship, but you know, a lot of their guys didn't show. Didn't play at the qualifiers as well, and they had some the Australians had some injury concerns, and so now they but New Zealand ended up in the one game losing basically in the final minute, so tough one on that. And then so the 16 format qualifiers for the under 17 World Championship, that was, I believe, four teams and in one group, and New Zealand beat Australia, I think, by about 20 some odd points in group play. And obviously New Zealand and Australia beat the other two. I can't remember the other two teams off the top of my head. And then so they both reached the final, and Australia ended up beating New Zealand in the final, and will now headed to the World Championship, the under 17, the FIBA 2016 FIBA under 17 World Championship. So, you know, tough one for New Zealand. You know, they actually end up beating their arch nemesis in Australia, but it's only in group play, and then they get beat in the final. So, and now it's Australia going to the World Championship, and New Zealand are left out yet again. So tough break for New Zealand. But so Australia end up going back to the World Championship, and I think we're at 13 right now, 13 teams. So it's Australia as the latest team to join, and the other teams are United States, Canada, Dominican Republic, Argentina, hosts Spain. Then you have Bosnia, Lithuania, Turkey, Finland, France are the others from Europe. And the two from FIBA Africa are champions Egypt and runner-up Mali. And the three teams that are left will come from Asia. And I believe those qualifiers don't end up going on until the end of October, if I'm not mistaken, pretty late. So yeah, that's the field basically is set, other than the Asians, which I imagine would be safe to say that it's that China and Iran probably too, and I mean, I would imagine at least two of China, Iran, and Korea. Japan don't have Hashimura. He's a 98, and I don't know what their 99 generation looks like. Maybe a Chinese Taipei, you know, never know. But, you know, those will be happening, I believe, like I said, I believe in the end of October. I guess let's gonna talk a lot of U16s. I ended up getting a interview with the journalist who was on hand in Kaunas, who covered the event for FIBA Europe. That is Joe Hewison. He's a freelance journalist, and he's been to quite a few events now. And actually, talked to him for the first time. It was nice chatting with him. And like I said, he was the journalist at the under-16s for FIBA Europe. So if you went on the site at all and read any of the copy, that was the guy doing it. So you know, congrats to Joe. Another good job. He was also at the under-16s last year. Here's my chat with Joe Hewison about his experience at the under-16 European Championship. All right, so this week on the show we have Joe Hewison, a freelance sports journalist who was on hand at the under-16 European Championship in Kaunas for FIBA Europe. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I guess first off, for those who might not know you, you know, one of the good things about this show is that it's a chance to introduce the listeners to new people in the basketball world.
Yeah.
Why don't you give us a rundown of some of the stuff you've covered, maybe where people have seen, read your stuff and may not actually know. So, give us a quick CV, if you will.
Yeah, so I guess people might sort of have read my stuff and not known it was me with regards to a lot of the FIBA Europe stuff I've done. So obviously under-16s this week, and did the same competition last year in Riga, and then did U20 women this year and last year, and Eurobasket women in 2013 now. And I cover a lot of British basketball as well, with the BBL and the national teams there and youth teams. And before that, covered the London Olympics, the basketball tournaments there, on behalf of the Games News Service, which again is another thing where your work isn't necessarily attributed. So sort of a nameless, faceless person behind some of the copy coming out of that. But yeah, that's a bit about me, really.
So just with the Olympics, I mean, a lot of people have asked me if I'm going to go to Rio, and, you know, asked me if I go to the Olympics. And one of the things that I kind of shy away from going to the Olympics, because the main thing I would probably do is cover basketball, and knowing that there's six games a day, every day, men one day, women the next day. I suppose the days where you're in the men's mix zone after the final game, you'll have a little bit less sleep. But let's say an average over under, let's say 3.5 hours of sleep a day.
Yeah, I mean, first few days definitely it's close to that, and you try and get into some sort of system, because we're in a bit of a team. We're not sort of a one-man show, if you know, okay, you know what, gotcha. I mean, so we're quite fortunate on that front, so we try and sort of try and work out some sort of system where everybody's happy and get some sort of sleep. But yeah, it's pretty trying, particularly when it's sort of all day every day. And but yeah.
And that
mix, don't we? You see all the top guys and all the top level stuff. So
that mix zone for the men is probably pretty crazy, no?
Yeah, it's yeah, it's like nothing else really. Particularly when the US guys roll up, and sort of you get all the day trippers who sort of got a pass that will get them into a mix zone at basketball, despite never having been to another basketball game or anything else, and they'll just come and have a look what's going on.
And I mean, now more and more, I mean, you know, you have all these international guys, you know, like if a Spain plays a USA, you know, a Chinese or a Japanese or, you know, South African or, you know, all these other journalists want to see these guys as well, too. And so, I mean, that's.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if they have one guy that's that's in the NBA or whatever, or even Europe, and he's sort of globally known, they'll be following his every move. And that comes with. So if he's from, I don't know, I can't think of an example now, but if he's from a country that is quite media savvy, for want of a better word, they'll be covering it pretty full on.
And talking to you before, you mentioned that before the interview started, you mentioned that you were in Baku for the European Games. I did plenty of coverage before the European Games preview material, and you said you were there covering the 3-on-3.
Yeah.
What was your general impression of 3-on-3? Had you seen it much before? Being a 5-on-5 experienced guy, what's your take on the game?
I hadn't really seen it in its new sort of FIBA packaged sort of elite sport, if you know what I mean. And I saw there were parts of it that were really quite entertaining. You get the guys like the Serbian guys who obviously do it mm-hmm. pretty full time, and they're mm-hmm. quite slick and what you'd expect from 3-on-3, really fast, plenty of cuts, outside shots, that kind of thing. But then there were other teams, they'll just have one big guy and they'll just sort of pound it inside all day long, and some of those games got a little bit long to watch, if you know what I mean. So it was sort of mixed, really. I didn't really know what to expect. There were a few things that were really good about it. There was a lot of sort of entertaining games, that kind of thing. But a couple of things that maybe aren't quite there yet, which I guess you'd expect from a sport that's sort of developing in the way it is quite rapidly.
What aspect of it do you think will help it? Obviously, FIBA's pushing it really hard to become Olympic. What's the biggest thing you think will help get it to that state?
See, that this is where, right, because I think there's a question to be answered as to whether they want 3-on-3 specialists or if they want a couple of big name 5-on-5 guys who can sort of go there and sort of boost its profile, that kind of thing. I'm not sure which way they think is going to be the best way to do that, if that makes sense. And it did seem like a couple of guys are sort of at the end of their career and just sort of fancy it for a bit of fun, which is all well and good. And some of them are quite good fun. There was a guy, Romanian guy, I can't remember his name now, but he was really good at sort of
Santana.
Getting the crowd involved. Santana, that's the guy, yeah. Pretty good at getting the crowd involved and sort of, yeah, getting everybody amped up, and it lends itself to quite an entertaining game. But sometimes sort of the physical and technical side of it was just lacking a little bit. I think particularly on the men's side, the size 6 ball, it's a bit of a, some of the guys, like Bogris, the big dude from Greece, the ball looks like a tennis ball, and he was saying it's just like, I think that's what he said, it feels like playing with a tennis ball, and they really struggle. But again, that's something that, like, we're in the early stages of it, aren't we? So you don't really know which way things are going to go, but it sort of certainly captures the interest. Like, there was a lot of events in Baku that didn't do particularly well spectators wise, but all the big games for 3-on-3 were pretty packed and got a lot of excitement.
And how was Baku then? I mean, have you ever been there? Have you ever been part of the world? I mean, obviously they're pushing really hard for some big events. You know, they're talking about maybe trying for the Olympics. I think they have a Formula One race.
I think they're going to have some of the games for the European Championships football as well, where they're going to be across different countries.
Yeah. Was that 2020? Is that what
that? Yeah, yeah, I think that's the one. Yeah.
I mean, did you have a sense of that there's a big, let's call it, financial push in the sports world?
Yeah, there's a big sort of financial push in terms of trying to develop them and make them more globally known. In general, I think, sort of not just on the sports side of things, but we sort of took a few trips to their kind of historic sites outside the city, and all of that they're sort of trying to develop into holiday places, which it feels like, I've not been to Dubai, but it feels like what Dubai may have been, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, if you know what I mean, sort of quite rapid development, and obviously a lot of financial power. So I think, like I say, you can only sort of speak for the events I was at. Like, for example, the basketball got a lot of interest, but I know some events didn't quite match that.
What else?
Know what I mean, in terms of the public's appetite for sport.
What else did you see?
So we were in a venue. Our venue was split into four sports. So I actually covered water polo for the first week before then going on to the 3-on-3. And we also have beach volleyball and beach soccer all in sort of one venue. They were sort of, because the swimming events were all under 17.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because it sort of clashed with preparations for the FINA's World Championships.
And actually, so they had the youth festival as well, the Olympic youth.
Yeah. So it was sort of came at a strange time in their calendar. And I spoke to one of the guys from FINA, and he said that was sort of the reason they went with under 17, because they basically, if they went for seniors, they just weren't going to get the top guys because they're all preparing for the Worlds, and this was like the first one of an event, so it's sort of like a trial run, which I guess was the same for many of the sports. But I think that's perhaps where 3-on-3 was a bit different, because a lot of the top guys were all there.
Yeah, I mean, how many of those guys were? I mean, obviously the Serbs were, and I think Santana. But how many of those guys were on this this world tour that that FIBA has?
There are a few, but they have quite an interesting ranking system where you're ranked in terms of how all teams from your country do. So there's sort of a bit of a mix. And sort of participation levels, that kind of thing. So there's a lot of different things that go into deciding your ranking and seeding. And there are a couple of five guys. So there was Nacho Martin from the ACB, who was playing with the Spanish guys.
And you had Bogris. Who else were? I mean, I know the Belgian had a couple of women, but who else? Yeah. Who were the biggest names that people might know then?
Yeah, I guess Bogris, Martin, Serbian guys, if they know 3-on-3, I think who else there was now. It's been there. Feels like a lifetime ago with two FIBA events in between since then.
I think those were the big names, because I remember doing most of the rosters, and that was most of the. Those were the really big names.
Yeah.
We brought up just really quickly there the European Olympic Youth Festival.
Yep.
No, the European Youth Olympic Festival, right?
Yeah.
Well, one of those. It happened in Georgia. And that was a under-16 tournament for basketball. And the champions of that tournament were Bosnia, and they played Spain in the final. And as it turns out, those two teams made it to the semifinals.
They did.
Of the European under-16 championship with, I think, probably more or less the exact same team. I don't remember actually going through the rosters of the Georgia teams, the teams that played in Georgia, but I know most of the big guys all played in Georgia. So you were actually there for the second year in a row. Maybe first in general, knowing that I was at under-18s, and where you might have a 16 guy come and maybe play with the 18s. To kind of get them ready to maybe help ahead of time. There was no 99s at the under-18s because the under-16s obviously was qualifiers for the under-17 World Championship. Did you sense that there was a difference in level, general level of play between the 16s last year and this year?
I think this year... Well, last year, first of all, France were sort of, from the beginning, really, Latvia was sort of with them. France were sort of on a level all on their own last year, and it's sort of difficult to compare them within the context of the whole competition, if you know what I mean. Whereas this time around, there was a bit of a gap, but this time it was sort of, there were four teams that were pretty close who were the four teams that ended up in the semi-finals, and there was a noticeable gap between those teams, and I think that was sort of part of it. They've sort of sent everybody they possibly could to try and achieve World Championship qualification, and there was definitely a gap. And sort of the semi-finals on Saturday, both games were really, really good. I thought really high level, really entertaining as well, and that was sort of perhaps a difference from last year, I guess.
Just wondering, as far as you know, the main guys that may have been missing from the tournament, one guy that comes to mind is Yves Pons, the French guy, who also played at the Jordan Brand Classic. Other than him, anybody that you can kind of think of who, I mean, obviously 16s is kind of hard to say who's not there, but is there anything that you talking to the teams or whatnot saying, this was a guy who wasn't there?
No, I didn't really get that sense from any of them, actually. I mean, you mentioned Ponza, and he was sort of one of the guys last year that sort of athletically looked sort of on a level that was sort of beyond a lot of the guys there. But in terms of guys that were missing, I'm not too sure, really, no.
Okay. I know talking to the Croatians, for example, they said that pretty much this is a pretty weak generation, but
Yeah, they were sort of talking to the Serbian guys as well, actually, they sort of got the impression that coming after the generation before them, who were pretty strong but didn't do, they sort of didn't really reach their potential at the U16s last year, that they've sort of been looked down on a little bit back home in terms of people think they're not very talented, this and that, and they sort of use that as motivation a little bit. I think they couldn't really bridge the gap to the sort of top four, but they came up with some decent performances.
I guess let's start with, I mean, obviously we're going to talk a little plenty about the let's say the at least the quarterfinalists, definitely the semifinalists. But maybe going with the 9-16, kind of going through that, let's see, who were some of the guys that maybe that you think, who people who kind of just followed the quarterfinals and on and didn't really catch any of the first round or any of the 9-16 games, the placement games. Maybe who are some of the guys that that you think are definitely guys to kind of watch out for in the next 1 or 2 years?
Yeah, I mean, I know you mentioned sort of Croatia there, but Bacho, I'm going to absolutely butcher some of the pronunciations.
Darko Bajo.
Yeah, I mean, he was just, when he seemed to really relish sort of when a guy was on him repeatedly, it was sort of turned into something of a personal battle. He seemed to really relish those, and he would win most of them. And he sort of, I don't know sort of the stats off the top of my head, but I think he got to the line more than anybody, because that was sort of just the only way to stop him sometimes, because he would pull out a little bit and take guys off the dribble to the basket who weren't quite as agile and mobile in terms of when they'd matched up with him for size, if you know what I mean. So he was definitely one that, because I think after they dropped into the 9-16, they sort of won just about every game after dropping out of the main competition, which sort of showed that they were right on the edge of being in that top eight. They were quite...
They did go undefeated afterwards, yeah.
Yeah. So they were sort of probably a little bit too good for that, but not quite good enough for the top eight.
What'd you think of Giordano, their point guard?
He had nice sort of spurts, but didn't seem to quite influence the game as much as Bacho did, if that makes sense. He sort of would have stretches where he'd be like, you could see why people think so highly of him, and I think that's definitely there. But as is probably to be expected with guys who are this age, doesn't quite sort of, for me anyway, I don't think he really sort of sustained it in a way that some of the other guys did. Of the other teams in the 9-16, there was Caruso from Italy. I mean, the thing that stood out for him was sort of his frame sort of makes him look probably bigger than he is. But in terms of blocks, he just seems to have great timing on blocks. I think he averaged something.
That was the power forward, right? Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I think he sort of...
Guglielmo, something like that.
Yeah. Try to avoid such first names. But I think he went for something like 4 blocks a game and had 7 in one game or something like that. And it sort of, with some of these young guys, that can deter opponents sometimes, and they think they're going to get embarrassed driving in there, some guy just swatting it out. So that was one of the things that sort of caught my eye from 9-16. Who else dropped into that? Oh, obviously, I kept a bit of an eye on England, mm-hmm. and they were sort of... I think Kareem Quealy would obviously be a guy to watch. He was only 14 and there, and he's sort of in the process of signing for Real Madrid, I think. And he just seems so laid back. He sort of takes everything in his stride, and he's not one that's going to become sort of overawed by whatever's put in front of him. So I think he was MVP in the Mini Copa with Real this year. He sort of, from what people tell me, doesn't seem to... he's not getting carried away with any of that at all. His sort of laid back nature sometimes misconstrued as something else, but he's just quite calm. And he didn't see huge minutes playing 2 years below, 2 years above himself. But when he did come on, there were sort of definitely flashes of what he could do. Some sort of drives where he took contact and finished. You think he's 2 years younger than everybody else, but yeah, that was one of the things. Obviously, watching my own country. Who else? Yeah.
What about What about Moraitis?
He's really quite talented, but he just had no help at all. So that sort of impacted him. Sort of obviously having to take tougher shots and just take on quite a big load. But
it's amazing how much the Greeks had after the two tournaments that I watched. I watched the 19s. And 18s, and how much of those, you know, how much that whole group had, and then was basically just Moraitis. So it's kind of disappointing for him.
Yeah, because he certainly, I think it was the first game they won. He was really impressive, and it sort of it papered over those cracks, if you know what I mean. yeah, that was right. The Israel game, whatever those cracks were, where other guys weren't perhaps providing with the support he needed. But yeah, obviously, when you play 9 games in 11 days or whatever, starts to show.
Yeah. What's his name? Emmett Abel. I put a couple of videos out there, some vines out there about some of his range. Mm-hmm. The little Israeli, obviously they went down, but showed some serious range. What'd you think about? Did you see much of him? I know covering these events, it's not always easy to see many of these teams.
Yeah, I admit he's one of the guys who sort of didn't as much of him. You sort of see all these stats and then some of the plays, like you say, when you put the vines out there and stuff like that, and sort of really see enough of him to really pass a judgment. But like you say, he sort of was doing an awful lot for them in terms of just usage. You go into him and just looking now, the last two games took 28 shots, 25 shots, and a decent return on them. But that's again, perhaps being relied on too heavily, but that's what you get with some of these age group competitions,
where you don't have much to go around.
Yeah.
Montenegro, would you? Obviously, they have. I don't have their. I think Marjanovic, isn't that his name? Let's see. Slavkovic.
Slavkovic. Yeah. They made like a really good start, having obviously come up last year from Division B, and I was sort of quite excited about them because all their games they sort of played with, similar to Bosnia, really, they play with such sort of intensity all the time and sort of a lot of fight, and all their first few games were pretty close, pretty competitive, and then they just sort of, once they dropped out of the main competition, just sort of seemed to fall away a little bit because they avoided relegation because they, in their first classification 9-16 game, they were drawn against Russia, who obviously weren't there, so that sort of secured them survival straight away.
That's just not fair.
Yeah, so that sort of lifted a bit of their I don't know, sort of the motivation, I guess. And so yeah, they actually lost their last four after winning three of the first four, and the game they lost of the first four was against France, was that Quad's tipping on the buzzer, mm-hmm, which was a great game where they were going back and forth. But yeah, Slavkovic showed some real sort of nice moves, just sort of good finishes, getting to the basket when he wanted to. I think it was Titic as well, the point guard, sort of one of the guys that when there's like a big moment, he didn't get away from it at all. Quite enjoyed watching him as well. He was quite a good fun. So I think for me, when I watch these sort of competitions, obviously the size and the skills and sometimes things that are going to be polished as they get more coaching and just play more and more. But sometimes it's sort of looking at the character of guys that sort of want to take those shots and want to be involved in those big moments, because it can be quite a big thing, I guess, for them when they haven't really played on this kind of level before. So that's one of the most interesting things of these type of competitions, really.
if you're a Germany fan, who can you, in your opinion, look forward to more in the future? Isaac Bonga or Philipp Herkenhoff, or do you have even another guy?
Yeah, I spoke to Bonga, and he has a lot of sort of, you can see why there's so much potential there. He's so athletic. He can sort of, whenever he wants to go by someone and get to the basket, it happens. But it's just the finishing is not quite there sometimes. And obviously shooting isn't really a massive strength at this stage. But yeah, and he's just so long as well. He's a problem on defense for other teams. I mean, he's just sort of can make a real nuisance of himself on the defensive end. So he was, yeah, his athleticism just sort of sets him apart. And I think it was the game against, because they beat Lithuania in their group game, 77-70, I think it was. And it was sort of tighter than that down the stretch. And there's just a couple of times where the other guys were starting to get a little bit caught up, and he sort of calmed it down a little bit and sort of showed a little bit more understanding than those around him. And that sort of, I don't know, I think that says quite a lot about guys at this level. Herkenhoff was a little bit hit and miss, I think. I was sort of looking for him from the start to be one of the guys to be really excited about. But it was just, I don't know, there was just something not quite to match that excitement, if that makes sense. It's quite useful in the way you can sort of step out and shoot from three, that kind of thing. But in other areas, there would be times when he'd just sort of, his opposite number would get on top of him, and it would seem that that had taken away from his confidence a little bit, which again is kind of understandable at this age. But then it's something, can you change that, or do you want to change that? Yeah, so that was my main sort of takeaway from him. There was Nelson Wiedemann had a really good game today, actually, I think, and he just quite offered a little bit something different to the other guys, just with his outside shooting and sort of off the dribble, some really nice sort of aggressive drive to the basket and from just great angled shots, if you know what I mean. Sometimes some guys can't really do that, but he can just sort of pick his spot off the backboard from an angle, and that was quite impressive.
I guess Germany actually was in the quarterfinals. They finished seventh. So actually, I guess I ended up skipping one team. Why don't we hit them really quick? Latvia, obviously, there was the Kuros, the younger brother, Rodions. That's actually one team. I think I only saw them once. What did you think of them? Was there anything?
Yeah, well, they were another one who was sort of a quirk of the system in that they only won two games, I think, but were safe from relegation before the final day. So I didn't see a great deal of them. Mm-hmm. If I'm honest,
Don't worry, man. I totally understand it.
There's a lot of games.
Yep, and you're writing game reports on every game.
Yeah, yeah, and some are easier than others.
Mm-hmm. All right. So why don't we? Obviously, so semifinals were Spain, Lithuania, Turkey.
Spain, Bosnia, and Lithuania, Turkey, yeah.
Right. And I guess, was there any surprise of them, those four, getting through? Did you think that any of the other teams maybe could have gotten there that ended up not getting there of the other four?
I mean, between those four, it was sort of, when you look at those games in isolation as well, you could really say that it could have quite easily been a Turkey-Spain final at the same time. Because, I mean, obviously, Spain-Bosnia was a double overtime with Campara hitting a three with 7 seconds to force the first overtime.
And them not fouling.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing.
Still
trying to figure it out.
There's a lot of those that I just don't get it sometimes, but so that was something that was really have gone the other way. And Turkey, Lithuania, just Turkey had a couple of close games where they just hadn't quite seen it out. They looked like they clammed up a little bit down the stretch. Well, actually, it was only the Spain game, but there were a couple of games where they looked like they were clamming up a little bit, and then they seem to have got over that against Lithuania, but then just the last play of the game, and they run that play for Bilechka to get to the basket, and he finishes it. And like I say, that's another one that could really have gone either way. But I think as well with Lithuania, you have to remember, particularly with those the final two games, the fact that they were played in that kind of sports world in front of all those fans for 15 and 16 year olds, it's a pretty tough environment, probably for players on both teams. But I think it definitely had an impact.
What do you think of France? Obviously, like we mentioned, they didn't have pawns there, but I mean, you look at guys like Horde and Bazile, kind of athletic, bigger players, and then you had this Mopsus, sort of athletic small point guard, and then this absolute magician in Bayhurst. Some of his magical passes, and actually, you know, obviously a lot of those guys will get, let's say, the press, but you know, anytime they really needed a basket, you know, one guy that they could go to was Fevrier, you know, Ivan Fevrier. You know, he seemed to really, really, whenever they needed something, he would be a guy that I guess, actually looking at the stats, Blanc actually led them in scoring too. So
Blanc led them in scoring, but I think it was Spain where he went scoreless, and that sort of really hurt them. They were sort of only relying on Fevrier. Let me just double check that.
So what do you think of France then? Were you surprised that, I mean, okay, they lost in Spain in the quarterfinals, but... And...
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I had this discussion with one of the coaches. When you look at a team, who's under 16, like you say, is always quite unpredictable given the age and the guys won't have played perhaps at this sort of level before. But you look at the name France, and I think that this team didn't quite live up to that name, if that makes sense. So I think there were a couple of teams that sort of bought into that, particularly at the start of the competition. They were playing France and perhaps gave them a little bit too much respect. But like I say, Blanc and Fevrier were two real pluses for them. Although there was obviously the scoreless game for Blanc, and then he wasn't used much in the game after. I don't know if he got into some sort of argument with the coach or whatever, but he then only played, I'm just trying to get the stats now. I know he did play in the next one, but there was a stretch where he sort of really struggled, and that really hurt France. But like you say, Fevrier was sort of quite reliable for them, and it wasn't always the highlight stuff. He did a lot of the dirty work on,
yeah, exactly,
on both ends.
Exactly.
It was really useful, really productive.
Yeah.
And then some of the other guys you mentioned, like Quad and Brazil, was sort of quite raw, but you can see there is definitely something there in terms of just the sheer athleticism. And there was Abba as well, who's a couple of really big like chase down blocks, that kind of thing. And you think, yeah, there's definitely something there. So yeah, a bit hit and miss. Like Mopsus, again, is another guy that can sort of, he's got real speed and nice handles and can just go past guys, but his shooting was just from like mid-range and anywhere really was quite poor at times, a little bit disappointing. And then Bayhurst is a little bit different in that, like you say, he's got the nice moves and the fancy passes, and one in particular was really nice today. Mm-hmm. So yeah, a little bit sort of, I don't know, I'd like to see them again in sort of a couple of years, because there's a couple of guys that are really, you'd like to see how they look quite raw, but then you'd like to see them once they've developed a little bit more.
Yeah. They thought they were going out, and Serbia actually ended up staying in and then winning their next three games and making it to the quarterfinals. Look, watching this team a few times, remember watching, I guess the main scorer was Marjanovic, at this Pinar tournament in Turkey around February-ish or whenever that was. And I noticed that Petrusev, the 2000 center, was one of their main scorers in the in the warm up, a couple of the warm up games. But you know, I know you're probably don't listen to the show, but one of the phrases I have for somebody who I like that you know, either people don't know or whatnot is a personal cheese ball, without a doubt is Marco Pekarski. There's, you know, I saw him at the Belgrade Adidas Next Generation tournament, and you know, he only played a couple of minutes here and there, but you just saw something in there, and he's 2000 born, and really just was amazing, you know. And so what did you think of Serbia? You saw Pekarski up live, close and personal. What do you think? This Serbia team was not really fun to watch. I mean, I was watching Pekarski, but otherwise, I probably wouldn't have. You know, I probably would have just avoided the Serbian games in general. What do you think of them?
I mean, like you say, Pekarski, you can definitely see something there. I think the stretch against Italy where he hit the three threes in a minute, and you just sort of. Another guy where offensively you can obviously see what he's doing, but every now and then you'll just look down and you'll be like, oh, where did he get 14 rebounds from? And that guy, he's always involved. He seems quite cute and quite clever in some of his movement off the ball, just in the way that some other guys aren't. Marjanovic, yeah, I guess people might already know a fair bit about him being with Barcelona and whatnot, but he's, yeah, when he got hot, he was quite exciting to watch. But other than that, like you say, they were a bit of a grind, this Serbia team. There was Oskoskovic as well, was quite another guy who drove them on a little bit.
The little point guard.
Having played point guard very poorly when I used to play, I think that I always sort of have a look out for point guards, really. And he's one that sort of just caught my eye a little bit, just in terms of his sort of competitiveness and aggression, that kind of thing, and he sort of was quite good for this team, if that makes sense. And Boris Latinovic, again, probably pronunciation is absolutely appalling, but he was, I think he led the competition in minutes actually, but he was sort of another guy that they just seemed to complement the others quite well. When they had Pekarski and Marjanovic on the floor, they seemed to work quite well together, but again, not quite well enough to be one of the top four teams.
So I think they should be happy that they didn't have to fight against relegation.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, because I think they were a really talented group last year, but just sort of got unlucky. I think it was Spain they played in the quarterfinals, and that was one where they just lost it. And then after that, they sort of checked out a little bit. But they weren't quite on that level of that team last year. But Pekarski was definitely the one that stood out from that team.
Yeah, definitely one guy that I can't wait to check out in the future as well.
Another thing, I guess, is just sort of like a general point, but a lot of these guys are obviously still growing up. Pekarski in particular looks so sort of slim and skinny for his frame, that when he starts to sort of fill out a little bit and he can sort of, I don't think that was really his game, sort of banging down in the post. But if he sort of has to, then if he can then add that to his game, that's just another string to his bow, I guess.
And I mean, he's a serious guy who's going to be able to be a stretch four, stretch five, whatever, you know, because you see, not only did he show that stretch of the three pointers, but I mean, I don't have the numbers right in front. Actually, I could call them up really quick, but I mean, he probably shot what, 75, if not higher percent from the free throw line. 83. There you go. 83% as a big man from the free throw line. You know, that's, you know, that much more valuable. So
that'll work. Yeah,
exactly. That'll work exactly. Let's. How excited are you that Finland will be making their FIBA Under 17 World Championship debut next year?
Finland were great fun, as you'd probably sort of expect, but they'd sort of, I suppose, their coach as well, and he was really quite refreshing in that he was saying, we know what we are, we're not the biggest, we're not the strongest, but we can be the fastest if we want to be. And so they sort of just pushed it every opportunity, shot as many threes as they possibly could, and just sort of were great fun.
And had Multanen.
First name gets me in mind.
Elias.
Yeah, they were. Yeah. He was the guy that was sort of, if they needed something, they looked to him. But at the same time, there were kind of the guards in particular. Again, names. I'll get them now.
It's okay. But, nobody will know
they
right
were
now.
Sort of,
yeah, so
they're could really get going from three. I think there was a game earlier in the tournament where they had really struggled. They were sort of 1 for 18 from three, and they just kept going and kept going. And Antikainen hit 6 in the fourth quarter or something like that, and it was just sort of showed how. And that sort of came from the coach, just saying, just keep letting it fly, just keep shooting, and just stick to sort of that ability to just sort of have that resilience to stick with what they wanted to do, even when it wasn't quite going their way. So I really enjoyed watching them. And a couple of guys that sort of, as you'd expect, weren't sort of the most athletic, but sort of like Andre Gustafsson, I don't suppose he would have really shown up anywhere, but he just made a couple of sort of really smart plays in sort of tight games and things like that. And those things you sort of remember a little bit.
All right, I guess we can kind of talk a little bit more about the semifinalists. I personally was kind of hoping that Turkey would make it to the finals, because I think they were a little more exciting, and it would have been really fun to watch them match up with Bosnia in the final, but didn't happen. Your thoughts about Lithuania, maybe, because you watched them much more than I did, because it just seemed to me a team that was not really that thrilling to watch, and also it was kind of hard for me sometimes to go through the Lithuanian commentary sometimes. that was YouTube, so, but there's Kostas, who was pretty good. Obviously Velika was named to the All-Star Five. I liked Elvis, actually, not just because of the name, but Elvis was actually did some pretty nice things. I'm trying to think if there was.
Yeah, I mean,
those were the main guys.
They couldn't have been more different to their team. Yeah, they couldn't have been more different to their team last year, I don't think, really, because that was when they had Sedekirksis.
He just
had to do absolutely everything.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And sort of these were sort of a lot more balanced. Like you said, there wasn't anyone that really sort of jumped off the page at you. But yeah, like Velička, I quite enjoyed watching. Balčiūnas, considering he's 15 as well, there's definitely something there with him. He sort of, again, doesn't shy away from anything when you need it. Although in the final today, he had pretty good luck to tie it at the end, and I think he sort of, it was some way off, but again, happens, I guess. And Ignas Sargiūnas, he was sort of, I think he was up there in terms of 3-point shooting, and one game in particular he was perfect from the floor, 5 of 5 from three, and then just shot 1-2, I think. So there was a couple of guys that sort of could really get going if you needed them to, but they never sort of looked to one guy specifically. So yeah, like you said, they weren't sort of the most exciting in a way that some of the other top teams were, but there were things to definitely guys you'd want to keep an eye on.
I imagine you're probably getting close to having to run. Let's go to the other team in the third place game, or the team in third place game. Turkey winning the bronze, winning the third place. Obviously everybody is going to, know the team. I think Duran is a guy who has so much skill, has a great skill set down low, and obviously has to work on his body. Mustafa, I think it's kind of the big three, and then some guys that, Akiu is the, 2000 point guard. In general, what do you think of them?
Yeah, I think they sort of, with having Bissim, who likes to have the ball in his hands, likes to make his own shot and take quite a lot of shots, and then having Duran doing what he does inside, I think they did really well to make that work, mm-hmm. really, because mm-hmm. that could quite easily have gone very wrong.
Yeah.
But like you say, there is those that sort of big three, and I think it was in today's game we were looking at the guy I was watching the game with like, I think that's the first time there hasn't been at least one of them on the floor, and that sort of showed how they, because they all bought quite different things, but they were all sort of very, very important. I quite liked Sipahi, the guard as well, who I think's the cousin of Keenan.
Yeah, that's what I've heard as well.
Yeah, he was quite, didn't really do anything that jumped off the page, he would just sort of made guys work on the other end and then push the ball quite well, and I guess part of it's just feeding the other guys on that team. But like you say, they were quite exciting to watch, particularly Bittim on his breakaways and the dunks and that kind of thing. There was one in particular off a spin move, two-handed dunk that was really quite
impressive. There were plenty of impressive dunks from Bittim. I mean, you're thinking that he's 16. There was some pretty nasty stuff, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Spain. Kind of motor through this pretty quick because I know you got it. Spain, you know, I think it's way too much work to go back, but it would be kind of fascinating to see how many three-pointers from Gonzalez came before timeouts. I know in the quarterfinals, he of his five threes, three of them were before timeouts. He just has this big game sort of feeling to him.
Yeah.
And he worked really well with Sergi Martinez. Obviously people know Lang McCarthy. But actually, I mean, okay, I like Gonzalez. I like Gonzalez of those three probably the most, but probably one of the guys I'm most interested to watch is Ignacio Rosa. This athletic long guy who could do a bunch of different things. Your thoughts thoughts on Spain?
Like I said, I think McCarthy and Martinez really jump out. McCarthy really makes guys work defensively. In the first game with Turkey, I think he did a really good job shutting down Bittim, and that went a long way to helping them win that one.
Yeah.
And they had a really nice sort of, just a move that they went to if they ever needed a score, where with Martinez in the low post and just a little shovel pass handoff to a guy slashing, which was usually McCarthy or Carrasco or someone like that. But today they sort of went away from that a little bit and seemed to settle for quite poor threes a lot of the time. So yeah, but like you say, Gonzalez as well. I think he had quite neat footwork as well in creating his shot a lot of the time, which I quite like. Sort of, obviously he's not the most, he's not going to go and do some Bittim dunks really for you, but he can then create his own shot in a different way. So yeah, I really enjoy watching him. Spain, who else? They seem, at the start of the tournament, after they got over the Lithuania game, I thought they'd go on and win it, because they just seemed to be the team that made the least mistakes and seemed a little bit more polished, but just the Bosnia game, I don't think you could really legislate for a double overtime. It could have gone anyway, really. I think
Had the game and they didn't follow.
And then when they get into the double, I think they had two of the guys, I think it was Martinez and someone else, fouled out for the majority of the second overtime. So yeah.
And what do you think of Rosa?
Yeah, I quite liked him. I think he offered something a little bit different to the other guys, mm-hmm. in the sort of Martinez did what he did, and Salvador pulled out quite a lot. And he, again, against Turkey, that was one of the things that I think helped them. He sort of took away Duran's strengths on the defensive end, because he sort of stepped out a lot and sort of started hitting the threes, and then they have to come out and respect that a bit more. So with Rosa, yeah, he sort of complemented that with everything else coming on. He came into the system and just sort of complemented that quite well. Like you say, fouling, and they could have won it, but
yeah, they could have been.
They didn't.
All right, let's go to the champions then. Bosnia Herzegovina. There's the MVP, who likes to have the ball a lot. of course, Jana Musa, who, you know, has to remind you quite a little bit of Edna Natic from the U18 team. Another guy who was just fantastic was Nego Shakiras, who I think really got them through on that semifinal where he had that big stretch to come back. I think it was there was the block, and then on the other way he had the turnaround lay in, and then hit later on hit the three, and then really just a real, okay, he's small, but just a really solid point guard in Shani Chompara. I think again, it's, you know, at this level, it's a big three is often enough. Not saying that it's only those three. But what do you think of the champs?
Yeah, well, I think they really benefited from that three. That three were all there last year, and I think they benefited that. They were all sort of so ready for sort of big moments. They were almost queuing up to take the big shots out of those three. Like, they all had them. Chompara, they all had a moment where they came up with the big shot when it was needed. Obviously, Musa more than the other two, in that he just takes a lot of shots.
He'll take anything.
Yeah, and you just think sometimes this should run out in a minute, if you know what I mean. Like, he had 10 shots in the first quarter of the final and was on 15 points. You think, well, it's working now, but is it going to work for 40 minutes? And then it just sort of does. I mean, with him, it's still his outside shot. You don't really feel confident in it. But then tonight he hits 4 of 7, one of them from Vilnius. And yeah, they just sort of continue to defy belief a little bit, because they are sort of, I don't know, it just seems to carry on. You keep thinking the bubble might burst for some reason, for one reason or another, but it doesn't. But like you say, it is that big three, but then they do get quite big, I say big, but they get contributions from other guys. I think it's Emir Sekovic.
Sekovic.
Who had, I think it was buzzer beater at the end of the first half today, sort of off a Musa miss, just sort of following it in.
Yep, exactly.
And Lazar Mucic just comes in and just bashes, because so much of their game is just Musa driving and getting a shot up, and then offense, everybody crashes the boards, and it all functions well. I think the coach is really young as well, and that sort of, he seems to have a real bond with them, because I think to let Musa do what he does, you've got to have a lot of trust in him, and he's got
thick skin.
I spoke to him, he has to feel he has a lot of trust from his teammates as well to keep doing it, because I think a lot of players, when you speak to them about leadership and that kind of thing, you feel some of them are saying what they think they're supposed to say, but Musa seems to just sort of live in the sort of very few minutes, moments that he's on the bench. He's sort of on his feet, chewing on a towel, sort of can't bear it. He's jumping up and down. It's sort of, he lives every single second of it, and he sort of is always the first picking people up, that kind of thing. I think that sort of, as well as all the however many shots a game and however many points, I think that's one of the things that's quite special about him.
All right, let's close it with two questions. One guy who will be, all right, let's leave the big names out of this question. So one guy who will be, let's call it very good, in 3 years, bordering on a star.
Okay. See, I'd be tempted to go to Lithuania for this, because I don't think too many of them qualify as the big. Balčiūnas Balčiūnas is
okay,
a guy that
great.
I think.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
Why do you say that?
Just the fact that he sort of is already really, really competing inside, being a year younger, and sort of having seen how Sekiris came on from last year in a similar sort of mould, how he sort of, as he's grown, becomes so much more effective this time around. I think I can see a sort of similarity there, where Balčiūnas might follow a similar path and sort of develop at a similar rate. But yeah, I liked him.
Excellent answer. Last question. You are starting a new club, and you can pick one player from everybody in this tournament. He is in your club, your organization. Who do you pick?
It seems too obvious to say Musa, but I think he just seems he just relishes it so much, like the big moments. You just, like I say, that leadership element where he wants to do it. He sort of, none of it seems fake. It's all so genuine. Like the emotion today when he got the two free throws with 0.1 of a second left to play. It's sort
where
of,
the referee we had even come in over and
I sort of
tell him to slow down and settle down.
Directly opposite to him, and you could just see the sort of realization of what was happening on his face. And he went from sort of being in game mode to disbelief to just unbridled joy in the space of about 2.5 seconds. It was just, it's so sort of raw and genuine that I think that should be enough to drive him on. I mean, obviously there's sort of, obviously things like his shot that need to be worked on and things like that, and you don't know how his body's going to develop, although he's already sort of a size that's quite a difficult matchup for a lot of guys. But yeah, I think the sort of mental and emotional side of him is what I'd take.
How close is Batim?
See, he's sort of, for me, on the other end of the scale, on the sort of mental, emotional side of things. I mean, talent-wise, he's really good. And sort of, again, sort of outside shot is not quite where you'd want it to be for someone of his position and how he plays. You'd like it to be a little bit more consistent. But it's the, I said to someone, I think he'd be quite difficult to play with. In the way that, obviously, this sounds like I'm contradicting myself now, that he's sort of quite similar to Musa in that likes the ball in his hands, that kind of thing.
Okay, I agree. I agree that I would take Musa ahead of them because exactly what you just said, that Musa is a guy who, you know, who enjoys the pass as well. You know, he'll drive the length of a court, he'll get in, and he'll dish at the last second.
He's a great passer. He sort of, in the process of the drive, when he's already in the move, he seems to be able to pull out a pass that nobody else except his teammate is quite expecting, and he sort of can execute that.
Exactly. And I think it's that passing willingness, not necessarily ability. I think Batim probably has that ability too if he wanted to, but the willingness is probably why I would probably take
natural ability. You'd probably say Batim is, I think would say he's with Musa, if not above, maybe, but just sort of done a, maybe a character thing. But then again, I don't sort of come in and see him for 9 days, if you know what I mean. It's sort of quite unfair, I guess, to make a judgment on someone's
It's 9 days more than a lot of people have seen him, so
yeah, I guess.
Joe, I know I've taken plenty of time. It's late and you are probably getting really close to leaving.
Yes.
Before I let you go, tell people how they can catch you. Social media, follow, Twitter, everything. Really quick, let people know how they can see your stuff.
So social media is @JoeHewison, which is just JoeHewison. And usually if there's any stuff that doesn't have my name on, I try and put it out there just so if people are interested, they can read it, basically.
All right, fantastic. Joe, thank you very much. Appreciate you coming on, and have a good break from the summer.
Thanks. No worries. Thanks for having me.
All right. Great stuff. So in case you didn't catch that, the Twitter was Joe Hewison, HEWISON. So go out and follow Joe. So thanks for Joe. You know, like I said, I was really impressed. I was happy with the level of play, and there's quite a few interesting players there to watch over the next 2-3 years, because that's what they got to do. They got to work. You know, they've shown that they can play some ball, but by no stretch of the imagination are they close to finished products. You know, you look at Musa, you look at Batim. Those are probably the two of the highest level guys right now. But they're 16. You know, and so there's plenty of work to be done, but there's a base foundation now that you've seen. So yeah, now it's up to them. Now it's up to them to work, and see what they can do. You know, Musa, Dusan Musa is going to be heading over and working with the senior team of Cedevita, and probably play for the junior team. And they gotta work. You know, the Batim is going back to Anadolu Efes, I believe he's with. If you don't get it done, if you don't work at this level, you know, you cannot rest on your laurels. You cannot say, all right, I've made it already, because you're 16 and you haven't done anything yet. You've laid a good foundation, but that is it. Thanks again to Joe for coming on. I guess with that, probably I'll leave you with that. I know that was a long interview with Joe, and so some of the listeners might be happy with it, with a return to some of the length of the podcast. I have a feeling next week's podcast will be kind of long, even though I'm on break, but I have a feeling it will be a long one. You'll find out next week why I say that, but I guess the last thing to do is to let you know what you're going to be listening to, and that is a song called Love Story, and it's by a band called Fernando, and that is with Fernando, and that song is available almost all the songs on the podcast, available on freemusicarchive.org. Again, Love Story by Fernando. So if you like it, go over and check it out. Loads of great music. Loads of great music there. And enjoy that. If you're on Twitter, there'll be plenty of people around there. There'll be plenty of people around posting live streams of games, of friendlies. Eurobasket friendly. So have go catch those and see who's playing well, who's also has some work to do. And I guess until then, I think next week we'll probably be doing a lot of Eurobasket, a little bit of Eurobasket preview stuff. So until then, we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy.
Hi, my name is Jared Holden, and you are listening to Taking the Charge.